The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And it's a very good morning to you at 9:05 on this Wednesday, the 29th of November, 2023. How are you all keeping? I hope you're very well indeed and got out of the house okay. If you had to leave, it was a frosty enough old start. And it's going to be cold now, right through the rest of this week and over the weekend, which means we have to use our heating more. But at least it's going to be dry and fresh and crisp. And some people love this weather at this time of the year. But anyway, we're here to warm the cockles of your heart for the next 3 hours. And we want you involved in that conversation, in that process. 086 60 25000. You are really great at texting in and getting your views across. We really appreciate it, so please keep it up. WhatsApps or texts to that number. If you would like to speak to a human, we've got two on standby, Caroline Orr and Shannon, taking your calls as well on 074 91 25000, and then email us if you wish, comments at highlandradio.com. All right, let's run through what's making some of the papers this morning before we welcome our first guests onto the show. We'll start with the Inish Times, and the 100% Redress Party is hopeful of taking several seats in next year's local elections. The newly formed party, which is made up of campaigners for homeowners affected by defective blocks, has been holding a series of information meetings around Donegal in recent months as part of the process of selecting candidates for the local elections, which will be held in June. The party, which was approved by the Electoral Commission in October, was holding the last in the series of meetings in Milford on Tuesday night following events in Carndonagh, Buncrana, Ballybuffet and Letterkenny. It's hoped candidates will be selected in the new year with a deadline for expressions of interest set for Christmas. The party's press relations officer, Ali Farron, said selection processes will be held in the new year in any areas where the party has been oversubscribed with interested candidates. We have got to have a strategy, which we think we have. We have got to have a plan, which we think we have, he said. But apparently they think they'll elect several. Ali had his cards very close to his chest when I asked him that question, but more confident now, it would seem. The Donegal Post, a Frost's businessman, is to be honoured with the Donegal's highest honour, the Freedom of the County, this Friday. Tim Kelly is chairman of the Kelly Group, from bringing cable TV to hundreds of towns across Ireland and the UK to staying up to speed with the latest high-speed broadband technology. His company has been at the cutting edge of the telecommunications industry since the 1980s. Nowadays, the Kelly Group has a workforce of around 3,500 people. Now, that civic reception has been arranged for Friday, December the 1st at 4 p.m. It's in the council chamber, County House Lifford, to award the Freedom of the County to Mr. Kelly. What a wonderful honour for anyone to receive. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, global music sensation Ed Sheeran released an extraordinary fan-made video yesterday for the song Magical, crafted by the transition year students and teachers from Finn Valley College, Drumbo. Adele Temple, Finn Valley's teacher, who submitted the entry, said it was an unmissable opportunity for her magical students. And we'll have Adele and some of those students on the programme in this first hour. So you can watch that as well, by the way, just to remind you that you can watch the programme. So it's very interactive in that regard. If you've got your smart TV, your Fire Stick, and you're at home, open the YouTube app, pump in Highland Radio Ireland, and you'll see that we're live there, and you can watch it on your big screen or across your mobile devices, and we're on Facebook as well. But you'll see the students, we'll show you the video as well as we talk. On to the Irish Independent. What do you think of these proposals? Dublin City rioters should have their social welfare cut and be given punitive prison sentences for wreaking havoc across the capital. Last night's Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting was told. A number of Fine Gael ministers called for the toughest sentences for those involved in the violence that erupted in Dublin following the stabbing of young children outside a city centre school. Ministers also insisted there should be no suspended sentence offered to those involved in looting businesses and setting fire to public transport and Garda cars. Junior Minister Patrick O'Donovan said those involved in the riots should be punished financially and have their welfare stopped for taking part in the attack on the capital. A lot of them already appeared in court, and many were unemployed, so were actually given free legal counsel as well. Mr. O'Donovan questioned whether any of the rioters worked and said most of them were in bed when the rest of the country was up working to pay taxes for their lifestyle. But many of them were workers as well. Some had just taken jobs the day of the riots, believe it or not. But what do you think about that? And why is it only on that issue? Should it be extended beyond that? Whereby part of your punishment, if you have idle hands, let's put it like that, and have no intention of working, is that you should be hit in the pocket as well. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. It was a horrific case yesterday, or it's a horrific on the face of it, where a person was found guilty of uploading child abuse images and had quite a few of those images on his devices, and he didn't receive a custodial sentence. His entire sentence, if I'm correct, was suspended. But I wanted to reference that this morning because we're talking about punishments, aren't we, and all that type of stuff. And I would have been interested in getting your views. But I looked through every single paper and I couldn't find it. Now, I'm not saying there's a cover-up or anything going on, but I simply couldn't find the story. So I'll dig it out online and read it to you a little later on, because it doesn't send out a very powerful message, especially given the statistics we said yesterday about what children in this country are having to go through. Right, net migration increases 50% to 77,600 in a year in April 2023. It's very important that these figures are fully understood, so we've invited a rep from the ASRI on to explain them to us, because just taking a headline is not very useful in this regard, because people come here for different reasons, for work, for not work, and all that kind of stuff. So I want to have a proper overview of those stats for you. But anyway, Ireland saw a significant increase in immigration in the year leading up to April 2023. 1,400 people arrived into the state, according to an annual review of migration and asylum by the Economic and Social Research Institute. This represents a 31% increase from the year to April 2022. However, emigration also rose. This is people leaving the country, with 64,000 individuals leaving Ireland during the same period, a 14% increase from the previous year. Now, some of those figures, when you talk about immigration, are Irish people coming home. And when you talk about 64,000 people emigrating, some of those will be Irish, some will be of different nationalities. And that's why it's important, I think, to drill into those figures. But this means that we had net migration of 77,600. So that means 77,600 extra heads in the country last year. With an overview of the latest data, as well as policy and operational developments, research, the case law from 2022, the ASRI report released yesterday, is a comprehensive overview of the migration landscape in Ireland. The report shows that many forms of migration are recovering quickly from COVID-19 travel restrictions. It also shows that migration is being impacted by shortages in the labour market and the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The year 2022 saw a significant increase in first resident permits. They're granted to migrants from outside the EEA from 2021. Some 85,000 permits were issued in 2022. Education, the most common reason. So people coming to Ireland to study here, seeking a residential permit. Half of them, that's what they were here for. Partially reflecting changes to eligible occupations for employment permits. Partially reflecting changes to eligible occupations for emergency permits, the number of issued was the highest in the last 10 years. So that must be the number of permits issued, but there's a word missing there. So we'll try and get a more clearer understanding of those figures a little later on. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: Gardaí will be able to access and intercept your private conversations on social media sites under new legislation, as the Justice Minister promised to crack down on crime following riots in Dublin. Is this an overstep here, do you think? The move from Minister Helen McEntee came last night as she continued to battle to save her political career after calls for her to resign followed the multiple stabbings and ensuing chaos caused by rioters in the capital last week. The Cabinet also gave approval yesterday for an amendment to data legislation which will permit Garda inspectors to require communication services providers such as Vodafone to provide cell site location data. I'll read on here because this is really quite significant. In protecting a person's safety or life. This is the latest announcement from Ms. McEntee, who has moved to expedite a range of legislation in response to the large-scale rioting that beset Dublin city centre last week, making headlines around the world. So Gardaí will be able to access and intercept private conversations on social media sites. Now, I don't know if that's Facebook messages. Is it your WhatsApp messages? Because they're apparently encrypted from person to person. And also the same Telegram is often used for messaging. It's also encrypted from person to person. So what actual powers will the Gardaí be given to sort of intercept that information? What do you think about those measures? Do you believe that that's what we need with what's going on? Or do you think it is a bit of an overstep? Let me know what you think, please. Fianna Fáil believe they can go from 0 to 2 seats in the Midlands Northwest constituency in the next Euro elections, with Barry Cowan and Lisa Chambers in the running. This is The Sun. Ireland is set to go to the polls to elect a new batch of MEPs next June. The Midlands Northwest constituency is now due to get an extra seat, with Offaly and Laois added to the electoral area. Fianna Fáil currently has no MEP in the constituency, which is home to Fine Gael's Colm Markey and Maria Walsh, Independent Luke McFlanagan and Sinn Féin's Chris McManus. Senator Lisa Chambers and TD Barry Cowan have already put their names forward to try to win a seat for Fianna Fáil, along with Senator Niall Blaney, and Chambers believes the party could take 2 seats in the 5-seaters. But it seems the national media is focusing on Lisa Chambers and Barry Cowan taking those seats. And really, in fairness, it's only just a passing mention of Niall Blaney's intentions to seek that nomination. The Irish Mirror, too brief ones to finish off with. Walking faster reduces the risk of diabetes, according to a new study. The research suggested a speed of 4 kilometres per hour or more significantly lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes. The findings from Saman University of Medical Science in Iran suggests every kilometre increased in speed is linked with a 9% reduction in risk. So if you're out walking, up the pace. If you haven't started walking, 4 kilometres per hour seems to be the minimum. And finally, a remarkable story here. A family have become part of a Christmas miracle after their cat returned home to them after 11 years. Today, Toby went missing in 2012 when the Allen family relocated 8 kilometres to their current home in England, Nuneaton. 11 years later, the 14-year-old Moggy returned to the Allens after being found 15 kilometres away in Bedworth. It's like a Christmas miracle, Mum Justice Allen said. So lift our spirits. What is the longest gap there has been between something valuable to you that was missing, be it a pet or an item or whatever it might be, something that you thought was lost and then ended up being found? Let us know. 086 60 25000. 086 60 25000. So if you were a story of a pet being lost and returned to you, now it doesn't have to be 11 years, it could be 6 months, I think that would still be remarkable. Or maybe there's an important item, an heirloom or something that you thought was lost and then you discovered quite a time later. Let us know. 086 60 25000. Can you match that story? Their cat went missing 11 years ago, turned up. But surely someone out there has a story similar, be it an animal or an item or something that you thought and then it returned and it felt like a bit of a miracle for you. Share your stories. You can also call us on 074 91 25000. Now, the Rape Crisis Network today at 1 p.m. launches its annual, yesterday launched its annual Rape Crisis Statistics 2022 report. We're joined on the programme now by Dr. Cliona Sadler, Executive Director of Rape Crisis Network Ireland. Good morning to you, Doctor.
Good morning.
Thank you for your time. Right, the report takes stock of the needs of survivors of sexual violence in Ireland post-pandemic, and all indicators of survivors' need for services have risen since before the pandemic. So could you run through some of those statistics and the meanings of them for us, please, Cliona?
Absolutely. So, you know, overall, the one of the questions is what's the demand and what do we need to plan for in terms of providing services. And what we know is that there's far more survivors out there than are calling into a rape crisis centre or a similar organisation. But as we improve in society in terms of talking about the subject and making it safe for survivors to talk about the subject, more and more survivors are choosing to and feel safe to reach out. So before, during the pandemic, we had some really, you know, significant challenges, some significant fluctuations. Numbers went up really dramatically in 2020. And so when we look at the 2022, on the face of it, since last year, there's a drop in some of these numbers. But actually, the comparison we need to make is with 2019. We went back to 2019 and went, right, okay, before the pandemic, what is now being established? That sort of where's our level now? And there is an increase in 2019, and we're seeing that pattern emerging in 2023 as well. And so, for example, we have a 13% increase in people taking up counselling and support in 2022 compared to 2019. We have a 10% increase in appointments being made. So this is about the appointments made is really for talks to the capacity of rape crisis centres. So that's an increase in capacity of 10% across these rape crisis centres.
And it's just very difficult to read, so one can only imagine what the individual is going through. Those who are under the age of 13 when subjected to sexual violence often wait decades before they're ready to discuss what happened. 44% wait longer than 10 years. So they carry it with them until such point as they're... And they continue to carry it with them, do not get me wrong, but until such point as they feel that they're ready to talk. What does that tell us? Is that the person's own personal decision, or is that them feeling that maybe there's no one there to listen, or what would be the benefit of it? I wonder what their motivation for waiting so long might be.
And I think you're right to wonder around what that statistic tells us, and we do too. And I think, you know, for us, you could take it at face value and say they simply didn't speak up, you know, when they were children under 13, and simply, you know, and then they waited till they were adults, and take it in that very almost literal way. Or you could ask the question, and I think you've begun to explore it, and we certainly have, which is, in what ways are children under 13 expressing their distress? In what ways are they speaking to us? And I think if we start from the place of, you know, an assumption that every child who is being sexually abused under the age of 13 is probably finding some way to express that. And perhaps what we need to think about is how we can hear that and respond to that better. Even where concerns are raised on children, and what we do know at the moment in terms of statistics, we can see where children have concerns raised about them and where the system, if you like, kicks in, the professionals kick in. We see, you know, significant rates there where we've been able to find the numbers, where those children's cases don't, for example, make it through to conviction, where there's a process, you know, they're processed out through the system in some way, shape, or form, and they may find protection or they may not. So even there, where we can ask the question of, even where those children, where we noticed, where we able to protect them? And I think we need to look really carefully at that area and to do a lot of work in terms of how we respond.
And I think it's important that we do, because how could we formulate our response properly if we don't? Because people ring Childline, young people ring Childline for many, many different reasons, but 120,000 contacts per year. Some of them obviously are going to be as a result of sexual abuse or violence. Yet your statistics show that only 24% of under 13s disclose abuse within a year of it happening. And as I say, it's probably not useful to sort of, you know, do any rudimentary or basic multiplication in there. But I think suffice to say that there is an awful lot of children seeking help, but there's many, many more that aren't. And we really, really need to get a handle on this as a nation and as a society if we take the care of children anyway seriously at all.
Absolutely, absolutely. It tells us we urgently need to find ways to really hear those children and to create somewhere safe for those children and to be able to respond better. And there's a number of challenges across the system on that. So really, our statistics here, I suppose, are a window into this area. And they beg a set of questions of a whole range of other organisations and individuals, the whole society really, but also, you know, the Gardaí and Child Protection Services and all of the mandates.
And the judiciary. I'm going to make a statement and you can comment after or not. I'll move to a next question if you don't. But if you are one of these people and you believe you were the victim of you were the victim of sexual abuse. And say, for instance, it was videoed. We had a case yesterday where someone was found uploading sexual abuse images of children, having many, many sexual abuse images in their possession, and walked out of court with a fully suspended sentence. If I were a victim of abuse and I was thinking of coming forward, and I don't want to discourage anyone to come forward, do not get me wrong, I would say, is that really what we as a society, is that what the courts think of this type of treatment of children?
So, I mean, I don't know that particular individual case. So
that's because it's not in any of the papers. It's not in any of the papers today for some reason. But anyway, go ahead.
But what I can say is that it's really important that we have, as you say, a really strong signal coming from all sectors of society, right the way up through to those court decisions and those sentences, which communicate clearly what our standard in society is, what our expectations in society is. Because really, that's where we're marking out in very clear terms what we decide is right and wrong in this society. So I think we need consistency, and I think we need a clear message there. I don't know, you know, in terms of individual cases, what the decision making was and what the factors in that judgment was. But certainly we need a signal from that level, which sets the standard.
So the majority of people who were the victims of sexual violence have told no one yet, or wait until they're adults to tell people. So how do we speak to those people to, if they want to, because it's very personal and everyone deals with things differently. But what do the statistics help us in terms of what we need to be doing?
Yeah, so there's a number of things that it tells us. And as you say, it is entirely the choice of the survivor, and they know best when and what they need from us. And that's us in rape crisis, but it's us, you know, anyone who's in the life of the survivor. The critical thing is that we're available when they need us, and that we're accessible. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we can tell from these statistics, for example, are the people who may have you know, more complex needs, intersectional needs. So, you know, 7% of the people coming to rape crisis centres have some form of disability. So we can then look and say, well, is that representative of the population? You know, are our services accessible? Are there challenges and barriers for those people and those survivors to reach? And of course, we know that they're likely to be more vulnerable to, you know, not only because they've been abused and because they have a disability, but this also makes them vulnerable to being targeted again. So it's really critical that we make sure that anyone who has those challenges coming forward can access us, so we can really examine how we are performing in terms of how people are coming to us.
Now, if anyone listening wishes to reach out, and this doesn't mean all of a sudden that multi-agencies are involved or Gardaí involved, it's simply speaking to the Rape Crisis Network Ireland, talking things through, deciding what you want or what not to do. rapecrisishelp.ie is the website, or you can call their 24-hour helpline, 1-800-77-8888. But as I say, Cliona, just simply contacting you and discussing things, it does not necessarily trigger a chain of events that someone may not be ready for or may not be inclined to do, but it starts a conversation and maybe identifies what supports are there for people that they might need.
Absolutely, and it's really important to say that in rape crisis, we don't direct you at all. We walk beside you. So it is your. We'll give you the information and we'll support you in making any decisions you need to make, and give you the range of options. And there's no, absolutely no right or wrong way to go about this.
Dr. Cliona Sadler, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate you coming on with us today. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, Ed Sheeran has chosen a video made by a Finn Valley College Instranorler, as you'd expect it to be, I suppose, Instranorler. It's the most, as the music video for his track, Magical. The school was chosen as one of 14 winners from over 4,000 entries created in over 75 countries. Adele Temple is an SNA in the Finn Valley College Snorler who submitted the entry and joins us now. Good morning, Adele.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
What's going on? This is bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wait, are we really having this conversation?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I'm going to wake up any minute now and have to get up and go to work.
Okay, we're going to talk about the process, but I recognise faces now. These are famous people now because they're all over the place. Ellie Mae McGavigan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Leona McGinty, you're there too.
Yeah, I am.
And Natasha McPartland, thank you so much for joining us. And a special guest to the right who isn't on my list. Who are you? I'm so sorry.
My name is Tina Gary. Adele neglected to include my name. It was my TY group that devised the concept.
Do you think, Tina, it's possible that the celebrity status is already going to their heads? Is that possible now that there's... Is it going to split up due to artistic differences or something?
Not at all. Very happy family over here in Finn Valley.
Of course you are. Right, so tell us about... when this was flagged, because I think I remember Lee Gooch reading something about this months and months ago. I see that's the only time I'd heard about it. So who wants to explain, you know, what was advertised and how he's got involved?
So it was just one night. I was on Instagram scrolling through, wasting my time. And I saw on one of Ed Sheeran's stories that he wanted fans to make videos for his new album that was out, Awesome Variations. And he was picking 14 people in the world. And me and my son, Donica, who's listening at the minute, he loved Ed Sheeran and he loved the song Magical. And as soon as I thought of magic and magical, I thought of the school that I work in and the students. And I thought this would be an absolutely amazing...
Jennifer Garrett, reception, please. Jennifer Garrett.
Yeah, we're at work at the minute.
Jennifer, would you get up to reception? We're doing an interview here. Go.
She's famous now. Yeah, so then I just applied. I never thought, and I sent off the application, didn't think anything else about it. And in a few weeks' time, then I got this email from Warner Music asking me to come on Zoom and talk about why I wanted to make this video. And the rest is what we are seeing right now.
And in terms of the production of the video and the storytelling of it, how was that formulated?
Well, that's when I roped my colleague, Miss Gary, Tina Gary, in with us, and she and her beautiful TYs come up with an amazing storyline.
No, Miss Gary, you tell us the story that you were telling in this. It's quite obvious, but obviously this is radio to some extent. Well, to all extents, so, every extent.
We wanted to be realistic and choose something that everyone could relate to. It is a love song. It's a beautiful ballad. Romeo and Juliet is a story that everyone knows. Having a teenage crush and being in school are things that are universal to everyone that people all around the world would understand. So we really knew we had hit on something there. Obviously, we were going to film it in school as well. So it had to be something that would be naturally taking place in school. So my TY pupils came up with the plot that it would be around an audition that would take place in school for Romeo and Juliet. So we started about then plotting out, you know, how it would be cast, what props we would need, what the narrative would be. You know, we had the shot types broken down per second and all of the transitions as to how it would be edited. And at that stage, you know, we kept getting further and further in the competition, and at no stage did we believe it. It always felt too good to be true. And they kept coming back to us and asking for more information. And then they were like, look, can we do this? And we were like, absolutely we can, but, you know, schools don't have editing suites. We're not, you know, rich with equipment. So at that stage, they involved a production company called The People We Meet Productions, led by a man called Dave O'Carroll, who brought a four-man crew to the school to collaborate with us. So during the school day and very late into the nights, the week after midterm, the week of the 7th of November, there was a four-man crew here working with the school, collaborating with our wonderful students. And we're so proud that we have created something. Thank you to Ed Sheeran and Warner Brothers. This has just been the most magical, if you would forgive the pun, the most magical experience for us all, Greg.
You get one pun, so that's it all used up. No, it is, and it's the way it's one each, of course. Yeah, it's the way it's put together too. It looks fantastic. Leona, what's your role in the video?
My role is Juliet.
The lead.
Well, I didn't want to say that, you see, but it is. I mean, you're very present in it. What was the process like to you? And then I suppose, what was it like seeing the outcome? It must feel really strange or fantastical. What's your emotions?
It was crazy at first. I just didn't know what was going on. And I just thought it was a promotional video for the school. And I was just like, oh, it's just nothing. And then whenever I heard everybody, Mammy was running around the house and saying, oh, me put the tan on, you put the makeup on. I was like, it's only for the school, like. And then I was going, man, and then I put the tan on, I put the makeup on. And I was like, right, it's definitely for something here. And then I found out it was for Ed Sheeran, and I didn't actually think it was real. I still don't think it's real at the minute, but
Yeah, because it's
Mama
all sort
did a very
of,
good job of keeping that secret, Greg.
I think so. And Ellie Mae, talk to me about your involvement in the video.
I'm one of Luna's best friends in the video, and getting through it was really, it was like a really good experience, and not knowing what you were doing was also very confusing, thinking it's just for the school, but when you find out, you're so excited. Mama said she nearly threw up when she found out.
Sounds to me like it's the mums that have gone through the ringer here, really, it's them that have had to...
We're very grateful for all our parental support in Fun Valley College.
Yeah.
But Ellie Mae, does it sort of, I mean, has it became real to you yet now that, I mean, it's everywhere, you know, it's not just locally because it's just blown up, obviously, globally, because Ed Sheeran's such a huge, huge star.
Yeah, it's scary. Like, I don't believe it's real.
All right.
It's like a dream.
Talk to me about your involvement, Natasha.
Well, I was one of Leona's best friends in the film, and I think it's just crazy. I can't believe that we're actually doing this.
I know, it's just unbelievable. Adele, what does happen now? What is the prize here, or it's featured as the video for Magical? Is that it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so he shared it on his Ed Sheeran said it on his Instagram last night and all his social media and on YouTube. So. We're YouTube stars now. And that was the prize. The prize was just to make a wonderful video and get the opportunity, and we got it, and I just still can't believe it either.
Yeah, it is really, really brilliant. And it looks... Here we go. What's this now? Sorry. Okay. And one other question I was going to ask you. I won't keep you because you're doing so much media. It's fantastic. Is that... What has been the dealing with the reaction to it been like, if you know what I mean? Because you've got the video, you have been through all the process, and now you have a massive list of different media outlets that you have to speak to or are going to speak to. That's a different side to it as well then, isn't it?
Yeah, a side that I'm not used to at all. And I had to get used to it pretty quickly. So 11 o'clock yesterday, it premiered on YouTube. I premiered YouTube 11 o'clock, and from then on, my phone was just going crazy. And my mammy was texting me too, like, this is, oh, you're everywhere. I was like, yeah, I'm everywhere. So it's been really, really good and really positive too for the students and for the school, because that's what I wanted. I wanted the light to be shone on the amazing work we do here. And the students are the reason I come in every morning. They literally make me smile without anything else. And I'm just so happy and so proud that I can do it for them.
And we all are. It's amazing. And it looks fantastic, and it looks authentic, and it looks professional, and everything that you'd want it to be. Leona, are you an Ed Sheeran fan?
Oh, I'm a big Ed Sheeran fan. So is Mama.
Yeah.
I was, like, screaming the house down.
Ellie Mae, what about you? Big Ed Sheeran fan?
Yeah, I'm listening to Ed Sheeran.
Very good. Excellent stuff. And what about you, Natasha? You can't, like, I say, no, I prefer...
Yeah, 100% I am.
Do you just get any free passes now next time he's in Ireland or anything like that there? Is there any goodies in that regard, I wonder? Yeah, I know.
He actually sent the school a lovely personalised video message that were able to play to the students yesterday, and it was a really nice touch. And he had said that he had seen the video and that he loved it, and he wished us well with it. So it has been a really positive, uplifting experience for the school, especially in the week that the Christmas tests are starting, Greg. You know, every little positivity helps.
Yeah.
Okay, no. And very finally, Ellie Mae, Leona, Natasha, have you any interest in acting or going forward? Because what a, you know, what about you? Everyone's looking at you, Leona. Do you fancy yourself as an actor?
I'm not too sure. I really like that.
Because he's so familiar now, you know. I mean, this is just an amazing platform for anyone to do that. Yeah. Because, like, you've got distinctive features, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. I mean, you are going to catch eyes. I wouldn't be surprised if you did get approaches. You never know. So it's all really very exciting, that side of things too.
Yeah.
All right.
Very exciting.
Yes, you're all brilliant in it, and we're all so proud, and we really appreciate you sparing the time to talk to us this morning. And I know you've loads of other media, because these are famous, other media commitments now, so we'll let you back to it. But thank you so very much, all of you, and again, congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, take care of yourself.
Good morning.
Okay, good morning to you all. That is teachers and students from the Finn Valley College Stranooler. And they submitted the entry a few months ago. It was a brilliant opportunity. It was kind of kept secret from some of those involved. And now look at, they are internationally famous. And why not? It's brilliant. It's described as a school love story with a Romeo and a Juliet twist. Okay, back with more after the break. We're joined on the programme now by Deputy Michael McNamara. Good morning, Deputy. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning.
Right, so you learnt on Wednesday that the Irish Defence, this is last Wednesday, I presume, that the Irish Defence Forces personnel are to form part of a German-led EU battle group and would be selected through a process of mandatory selection if there weren't sufficient volunteers to participate, and their deployment would be subject to the triple lock. So what, I mean, obviously, it sounds like a bit of, not conscription as what have you, but being forced to do something, but what jumps out at you about this?
Well, I suppose what immediately jumps out about me was the same day that we were told that the Defence Forces would be subject to mandatory selection, i.e. wouldn't be confined to volunteers. And, of course, the Defence Forces are finding it increasingly difficult of late to fill UN missions and have had to resort to mandatory selection, albeit in very, very small numbers. But that process would also be used for this mission, but that it would be subject to the triple lock. But on the same day that I received that answer, Micheál Martin came into the Dáil and announced that they wanted to get rid of the triple lock. Now, of course, the triple lock was acknowledged as a matter of EU law when Ireland initially rejected the Nice Treaty, and it was with a view to getting the electorate to essentially change their mind that it was enshrined in international law that the triple lock, Ireland's triple lock, would be respected, so that Ireland wouldn't have to contribute to EU common defence arrangements if the triple lock wasn't complied with. In other words, if it wasn't, if these missions weren't UN approved. I suppose that was because it was a fear at the time, rightly or wrongly, that sort of an EU army was under development, or would the arrangements that were in place would evolve into an EU army, and that Ireland would be engaged in that. And essentially, our army has always been about the defence of Ireland, well, the defence of the 26 counties. I mean, that was became very apparent, I suppose, during the early years of the Troubles, when there were calls for the Irish Army to intervene in Northern Ireland, and they were steadfastly resisted by Jack Lynch's Fianna Fáil government. So it's been about defence and been about UN peacekeeping, and sort of, I suppose, that comes from our history of resistance to imperial adventures. Many other countries, of course, in Europe have had more imperial ambitions historically, and indeed up to recently. I mean, imperial powers of Europe, particularly, I suppose, France, plays a very large part in Africa. Certainly, there are many European countries that have empires and maybe have ambitions to, some of their politicians might have ambitions to growing their international influence through military means if necessary.
So do you believe this is a coincidence that these two bits of information, well, not bits of information, the information that you garnered, but also Micheál Martin's statement, do you believe they are connected or just a coincidence?
I think it's just a coincidence in time, but I mean, what is not a coincidence, I suppose, is this increasing watering down, I would see it, of Ireland's non-alignment, including non-participation in EU. I mean, I think the government have been clear, and I accept their bona fides on this, that Ireland will not be joining NATO and no moves will be made towards joining NATO. But what isn't at all clear is, of course, that Ireland will become increasingly involved in European Union defence measures, including battle groups. Mm-hmm. We're already training. First of all, we were told that we were going to train train Ukrainian armed forces, but only in sort of medical, only in sort of first response and first aid and the medical side of it. And then we were told that the Irish Army was training them in the use of lethal weapons. And now we're taking this step of getting involved in battle groups, and we want to get rid of our triple lock in case that somehow prevents us.
Is it clear what a battle group actually is? Because it sounds obviously like it sounds to the layperson like it's an army as such. So what is a German-led EU battle group? What does that look like? What might their role be?
Well, I mean, there are obviously people in Europe, including in Ireland, who've called for Ireland to militarily intervene in Ukraine. Now, I mean, most of these people are safely ensconced in academic seats across the country and certainly won't be going anywhere near danger, and probably being upper middle class people with a fine salary won't be sending their children anywhere near danger. But they're happy, of course, to send their children, as has always been the case. The wealthy and the powerful in society are always happy to send the poorer and the powerless out to be slaughtered so that they can increase what they think is their influence in the world. These battle groups, is not, I suppose, initially they're about defence, but who knows what they're about and who knows how you define defence. I mean, borders in Europe have been, you know, have changed many, many times in the past 100 years, and various countries have various claims to various pieces of territory that that they can resurrect whenever it suits them. So, I mean, I would be worried by it. I mean, but most of all, I'm sort of worried by the backpedalling by a Fianna Fáil government, which it's our Fianna Fáil led Department of Foreign Affairs and Department of Defence, which it seems to me is backpedalling on what Ireland's traditional view of itself in the world, which wasn't very grandiose, really, which accepted that there was really not a lot that we could add militarily to forces, and that what we could perhaps hope to achieve was through diplomatic means and being a sort of an honest broker in the middle. But I mean, we've
kind of given up on that though at this point, haven't we? Because the line is that we can be military neutral, but we don't have to be politically neutral. I mean, it would have been interesting to gauge the views of the public. To actually adopt that as sort of the national policy, so to speak. Because I think for many people, it goes actually beyond what they interpret neutrality as for all the neutrality that we actually do have.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we've become increasingly bellicose in our condemnation of other states. Now, I mean, I'm not saying that I would condone in any way the activities of those other states. I mean, clearly, Russian aggression in Ukraine is a breach of international law. But then if we're going to go down that road of condemnation of breaches of international law, then we at least need to be consistent. And I mean, there are many interferences in other states right across the world carried out by many powers. But it does tend to be typically the former imperial powers like Russia, France, the United Kingdom.
But the government has taken quite a stern stance on Israel, though, in fairness, haven't they?
No, they have, in fairness. They have. I would acknowledge
that. But we also have to acknowledge there are other things going on in Yemen and Syria and all this type of stuff that we don't...
Well, indeed, I mean, Yemen is a...
Okay, I get you.
Yemen is a country that I would have spent quite a bit of time in, albeit 15 years ago, and it's tragic to see the complete destruction of what is was a very ancient state. I mean, with a lot of fantastic history, very multicultural state at one point, and is now reduced to rubble. And I haven't really heard a word about it. I mean, we had a delegation from Azerbaijan invited in by the Kyan Korla of the Dáil on the day that refugees were streaming out in Nagorno-Karabakh. I mean, if we're going to be bellicose, if we're going to start to voice our outrage about things, then we need to be consistent. But I suppose it's this increasing involvement in EU battle groups and that would concern me. And I mean, I think the European Union has not sought peace in Ukraine, has not sought to be a force for peace. In fact, the Commission President von der Leyen was out in a joint press conference immediately with the head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, as almost to conflate the two, which is fine, I suppose, for the likes of Germany, which is in both NATO and involved in European defence, but not for non-aligned countries like Ireland, Austria, Malta.
OK, thanks for your time this morning. Yes, go ahead. Did you want to finish a point?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, Deputy Michael McNamara, TD, thank you so very much indeed for your time. Okay, you are tuned to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. We have a busy couple of hours on the way, as you can imagine. Chris Ashmore will be in the third hour looking at business news, previewing the Business Matters podcast and so much more besides. Well done to the Finn Valley College Drumbo student, SNAs and teachers for such a marvellous video and achievement. Now we all we need is for Ed Sheeran to play at the next Stranola Tech Social, former name of the FV College. I don't know if that's going to happen. Nice idea. And just if you're on the roads, the sheep on the Mullinan Road in Derry. So be careful if you are out and about. So much more to come, as I mentioned, including more of your comments that haven't been ignored. We'll get to those after the news.